It's Friday, November 26th, the Big Sports Breakfast, Sky Sports Radio. And good morning wherever you are listening. Big show today, huge show. We've got a couple of, we're going to have some sticky wings in the studio for Loz's Friday multi. We're going to be giving away a couple of retail packs as well. So stay tuned throughout the morning. But big news yesterday in the racing world, one of the greats. He's a member of the Australian Racing Hall of Fame. 52 years of age, Glenn Boss just said, nope, that's it. Announced his retirement. He's got one ride there at Caulfield tomorrow, and it's on Spanish Mission, the hot favourite, Melbourne Cup place getter in the Zipping Classic. What a career from the great Glenn Boss, one of the great showmen in Australian racing, and he'll be sorely missed, although I'm sure we'll see him still around the traps contributing, just not on the track in a competitive sense, but 90 Group 1s. I mean, look at this honour roll. Seriously, obviously, three straight Melbourne Cups with the great Mayor Maccabi Diva, seven Doncasters, four Cox Plates, four AJ Seaoaks, four Epsom Handicats, two Golden Slippers, and of course, in more recent times when he came back after his stint there in Singapore, he won the Everest on Yes, 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 the Golden Eagle on Colding. And a showman, Loz, love him a lot. It just punters across the country, everyone's had a winner with G-Boss on board.
Yeah, wonderful career, Bossy. A lot of people love backing him. Best remembered for Maccabi Diva, three Melbourne Cups in a row. You mentioned all those stats, eight Doncasters and four Ebsons as well. But it came as a surprise because he's still riding well. He's got a ride on the weekend, Spanish Mission. 90 Group 1s, only Damien Oliver, George Moore, Roy Higgins, Jimmy Cassidy and Newey Bowman have won more Group 1 races than Glenn Boss here in Australia. So he's just had a fantastic career, and what a way to go out and what a ride to get in your final race. Spanish Mission ran third in the Melbourne Cup, odds on favourite in the Zipping Classic on the weekend. And hopefully he gets a win and goes out in the right possible fashion.
Clarky, morning to you, mate. And surely, surely we'll know who the Australian test captain is for the Ashes today.
Yeah, morning, boys. Morning to our listeners. I hope so, Middo, for everyone's sake. A lot of speculation, a lot of talk, really, around two players, Steve Smith and Pat Cummins. And I think that will be your captain and vice-captain. I just don't know what order. I look forward to that happening today. A lot of cricket going on, some horrible weather in Sydney. But it was nice to see last night, looking up at all the scores, nice to see Travis Head make 100. And what about the opportunity that he was given from the guy that's, you know, that's really fighting for that same position, Usman Khawaja? And again, you know, you talk about the right guy, the right character to be in this Australian team. Well, I think Uzi just showed it there and then. I think what he has done in this Shield game, to me, sums up why he should be in the Australian cricket team. And he should be opening the batting, in my opinion. He put his state first that he's captain of. He made a decision to send South Australia back into bat, which meant Queensland didn't have the opportunity to have their second bat, which takes out his personal chance to make some runs and show the selectors that he's in good form and he should be picked. And the decision's paid off. You know, Queensland are going to win this Shield game because of his captaincy, because of that decision. Yet, individually, he might have cost himself because Travis Head's just made 100 in the second innings. But to me, that is a great example of the right person, the right character that should be in this Australian team, always putting the team first.
Clarky's spot on there, isn't he, Loz? I mean, Travis Head, because, Moses Enriquez told us for that South Africa series, it was out of Travis Head and himself for the number five spot. And now you get 100 in the, last Shield game before they go in an intra-squad game before the Ashes, based on the fact that the Queensland captain, Usman Khawaja, sent South Australia back into bat, and there you go, 101 for Travis Head.
Yeah, well, obviously, as a captain of Queensland, you've got to make that decision. You know, you're there to win the game. Travis Head would have been hoping he got another knock and took advantage of that, scoring 100. I probably think that Travis Head is your number five.
I agree.
I think he's the future. He's a lot younger than Uzi. I thought Uzi, you know, I know he won't open because they've promised Marcus Harris that position, but I was hoping that Uzi would get a go as opener in that first test match, given that he bats up there in Queensland as well. For mine, looking here now, it'd be hard to see Uzi batting at five in that first test unless someone gets an injury. The other thing that stood out to me in that game yesterday, I saw Jake Weatherill. Have you ever seen a guy kick the helmet before Clarkey?
Did you see that? Mate, I did see it.
What was it go there? Did he have some beef, or is it just mucking around?
I actually don't think he had any beef. I think because what happened, the helmet was probably going to go to... at a lot of the grounds, there's like a little box which you lift up and you can put your helmets into that on the ground. Or the umpires might put some stuff, or the groundsman might put some stuff in the ground. So sometimes I'm assuming this is what happened. That was where that little box is.
Yeah.
But I don't care. You do not kick... Mate, if you kick your helmet like that, the helmet's busted.
It was a big kick. It wasn't just a brush.
And if I was Queensland to see someone kick my helmet like that, I would have went off my brain. And I think Uzi actually said something to him.
I think Usman fronted him.
But I tell you what, I would have been absolutely steaming. I don't care if it wasn't done out of spite or was just, you know, kicking it over to where it was meant to go. No chance can you kick an opposition state's helmet like that.
What's he doing?
I didn't know.
I'll tell you what that is. Absolute arrogance. That's what it is.
That's unbelievable.
So the player puts it down in front of the stumps at the end of the over, and he walks down after meeting his opening partner, Harry Hunt, in the middle for a chat, walks back down, sees the helmet there, and just gives it a fair old kick.
Mate, I would have went off my... Usman did very well to have a nice, polite conversation.
He kicked it 15 metres.
The helmet's busted.
Yeah.
The helmet's busted. You cannot use that helmet again.
It's like if
you get hit in the helmet, they say replace it straight away. Mm. He just booted the shit out of it.
Yeah, that's rubbish.
I can't believe that happened.
Absolute rubbish.
He'll get fined or something like that, won't he?
Mate, I don't know, but I tell you now, years gone by, if you did that to an opposition state's helmet, the whole team would have given it to you.
Yeah, I bet.
You're lucky there's not a punch-up on the field.
Yeah. Could you imagine if that was in a test match?
Oh, there'd be an outrage.
National helmet?
You know what? Loz, he should be fined for it. Even if there was no malice, even if he was just kicking it over to where it meant to... You can't... Pick it up and underarm it to the person to catch it. It's a helmet.
Yeah,
it's a piece of equipment that actually saves your life. You can't treat it like that.
I'm stunned by that. I hadn't seen that, Loz.
I saw that last night and I went, wow, what's happening here?
Yeah.
And I obviously assumed that he might have been joking, but then I re-round it and I thought, no, that looks as though it's a serious... That is a serious kick.
Yep.
Even if he was joking, it's out of line, mate. You can't treat it. It's not even... If it's your own equipment... Like, if I treated my own equipment like that, my old man would still grab me and give me the biggest flogging ever because it costs money.
Yeah.
If it's your own equipment, let alone if it's someone else. It's not even your helmet to touch.
In the world of rugby league, Parramatta fans, how are you feeling? Reid Marnie is off to Belmore in 2023 on a four-year deal. So he's rejected a three-year extension at Parramatta. The deal's said to be worth upwards of $650,000 a season. Must have been good Chinese there at the Canterbury Leagues Club. Now, this comes, of course, after the Bulldogs got Billy Kickow. They've got to be desperate to offload players there now at Canterbury, surely. But Parramatta, more losses than wins so far this off-season, I'd say, Loz.
Yeah, obviously they've had to prioritise their signings and they prioritise Clint Gutherson over Reid Marnie and a couple of those other back rowers, Papali'i and Nakora. But it is a big blow because he's a really good player, Reid Marnie.
Losing 23-year-olds getting to the prime of their careers is not good.
No, it's not good. But
I know you've got to sort your salary
cap. Your salary cap is so important. And I keep getting back to your salary cap and you prioritise players over others. And Reid Marnie... I'm sure if Parramatta offered him 600 and he's been offered 750 at the Bulldogs, you know, while the Bulldogs have picked up a good player, at some stage over that 4 years, are they going to be questioning paying Reid Marnie 750, 800,000?
650 is the
well,
report.
I think it'd be a bit more than 650. I think the Parramatta would have been around 550, 600. So if you're going to change clubs, I think you're changing for a significant amount rather than just a tiny little bit of money. That's what I'm hearing.
Is it just money, though? Like, Clarkey, you said a couple of weeks ago, you're hearing at Parramatta, not everyone's delighted that the coach re-signed.
Yeah.
And now you've got some key players continuing to leave.
Yeah.
That's what you said you'd heard. And, you know,
I just heard there was a couple of the senior players that don't get on that well enough with Brad Arthur, and they were surprised that he re-signed. And I don't know. I'm not gonna say what players feel that way, but yeah. I don't know if this is related to that either. I actually don't know if the players leaving, if it's related to that. But I just know from what I've heard, it's not rainbows and butterflies in regards to all the players loving the coach.
Hmm. Yeah, I don't know. I wouldn't have a clue. What I found with Brad Arthur, he's a very straight shooter, up and down. I think he's done a tremendous job out there at Parramatta. You're not always going to have every player on side.
Yeah, exactly right.
You know, that's just the way it is. Sometimes you're making those tough decisions.
Senior players can cause huge conflict laws, can't they? Because they do have control of the change room. Yeah. So if the senior players got an issue, just in their mannerisms and body language, the youngsters will pick up on that. If the coach is saying something and they're rolling their eyes or they're looking the other way in team meeting or whatever it is, the young players will pick up on that, and that can be a serious problem for Para.
Yeah, no, totally agree with that. I think you've got to make sure that you have all planets aligned in a dressing shed, and you've got to have everyone on board, whether they like it or not. The coach is in charge, but it's so important for the coach and the senior players to have that relationship. Just on those senior players, he has signed a couple of senior players over the last couple of weeks. Reuben Campbell-Gillard indicated that he wasn't going to take up that option. He eventually took it up and re-signed and recommitted to Parramatta, as has Clint Gutherson. And you look at, you know, Papalihi, he's only been there 12 months. Nakora has been there a couple of years. Yeah, Reed Marnie, yeah, I get that one. You know, I think that what he's been able to do and the way he's been able to develop his game, every season he's come back and he's improved. Mm. Like, he's improved his running game. He's improved his kicking game. He's always got through a mountain of defence. He's very enthusiastic. So every year he's added something to his game, and that's what you want to see in the development of a young player. And they're now starting to get him in the best form of his career, and he's leaving. So I can understand that a lot of Parramatta fans would be unhappy with that, but then you get back to salary cap in this environment. When clubs have got money and clubs are looking to reshape a roster and they're looking to move players on, they can therefore offer players from other clubs a lot more than what you can offer. And hence, which leads to players moving clubs.
Just on the great Glenn Boss, Pete from Wagga's text in the late 80s, working at Coastal Printing in Burleigh. Young skinny chap walks into the shop and says he wants his first business card printed and he's going to get a manager. It was around the time Vogue Rogue was going around and Cole Diesel won the Caulfield Cup. That guy was G-Boss. Good on you, Pete from Wagga. Great little anecdote there. Shane Warne's written a column today in the News Corp Press and the back page of the Daily Telegraph. Exclusive, Warne on Smith. Well, the headline here, no more Mr. Vice Guy. And the quote here on the back page, announcing him as vice captain opens up CA for ridicule and criticism, and they should throw the code of conduct out the window, says the King, Shane Warne. And again, Clark, you're just pointing to the fact, well, why does Steve Smith able to come back in some sort of leadership role when Dave Warner isn't?
Yeah.
Which we've spoken about a lot.
Yeah, I don't think... I think Warney probably feels a little bit like I do in regards to, he sees Steve Smith playing a leadership role and scoring hundreds and helping Australia win games of cricket, but it's without the VC or the C beside his name. He doesn't think he needs to have that. And I guess he probably feels part of Australia forgiving the past and moving on is allowing these players the opportunity to come back and play cricket for Australia. That's, you know, that's the country and the fans and Cricket Australia showing that we have forgiven and we have allowed you back into the Australian team. You know, I just don't think personally, I've spoken to Warnie about this a number of times, and we probably feel pretty similar on this one.
Also on the back page of the Tilly, raking point for Eels icon, Reed and Weep. And we were just speaking about it before, Reed Marnie having gone to the Dogs from season 2023. And Ray Price, Parramatta great, never short of a comment when he's rung up for a comment. And he says they haven't got a clue in regards to losing their hooker. Now, more, on the text line here, the Tamworth Eel, morning boys, it's a disgrace that we have let Reed Marnie go. What are the so-called retention committee doing on Brad Arthur? I said it last year. He has done all he can at Parramatta. He should never have been re-signed, and his finals record is abysmal. It doesn't matter. We went close against Penrith. We still lost, says the Tamworth Eel. One thing that Parramatta fans will not take this year is going one step backwards considering where they've been in the last couple of years and who they're about to lose.
I think it's all in this year with Parramatta. I think they're top four, grand final, minimum. I think that's where they have to get to convince people that Brad Arthur is the right choice and that was the choice that they had to re-sign him.
It's a lot of expectation, though, Loz, for anyone. Like, it's a hard place to start the season. If that is the expectation...
That's the majority of expectation, I would think, on Eels fans, because they've been in the semi-finals now for a period of time.
Do you honestly think they can win the comp this year, Parramatta?
I think they're a chance, yeah.
I reckon there's absolutely no chance.
I wouldn't write them off. I just look at what they did at the end of last year. I thought they were the better team against Penrith. And I think they had some issues there with a few players.
They just lost one of their best players.
2023.
Yeah.
Okay, so that's the thing. Yeah. It will be all in.
It's all in.
This is it.
Because you're losing all those players, but you're losing them not next year, the year after. So for me, I think they're a chance of winning. I really do. I think if they can get their best players on the paddock, you need a bit of luck to win a grand final.
Yeah.
You need a little bit of luck. I mean... Yeah. Yeah, I know people out there are very critical of Parramatta and what they've done over the last couple of years, but they're hard to win. Mm-hmm. You've got to keep the faith. I can understand your frustration getting there and coming up short, but this group of players, what they showed in those final games last year, they were resilient, and if they can bring that to the big games at the end of the year, win enough games to qualify for finals, make the top four, They can win it.
I just feel the expectation with Para is higher than any other team. Like, again, you're talking about let's just go three other teams: Melbourne Storm, Panthers, and let's go the Roosters. Got all their players back fully fit. Like, and if you add Para, those four teams, even if Para's at their best, right, they're equal with those other three teams.
Yep.
But they don't sit above them, so I don't understand why the expectation to be in the top four, I'm cool with that. But it's like if Para don't win the grand final, then they've failed. I'm like, whoa, how high is that expectation?
Well, I think because what they've been able to do the last couple of years has been there or thereabouts. They're a massive club that's well-supported, and they haven't won a competition since 1986. So every year, this groundswell of support happens around Parramatta. And because they are a big club here in Sydney and they're well supported, everyone starts to get excited. Whereas
is top four not good enough, Loz? Even with all of that? Surely making the top four, even just talking about those three other teams, that's an unbelievable achievement.
I think, mate, when you've had success like they've had and you've starved of it, people want to be back in those glory days. And they want to see their club back to what it was like in the 80s.
Yeah, I understand.
That's where people start to get frustrated because they go, well, why aren't we doing what we did in the 80s? Mm. It's a different period, different players. But because you've had that success, you've tasted that success, you haven't had any, you want to get back there. And then you've seen your club come so close. And now you look at Melbourne and your Roosters and... those type of teams, you just expect them to roll into the top four.
Mm. So add South to that as well. Like, my God, that's five brilliant teams.
Yeah. And I think the fact that they haven't won it since 86.
Oh, it's a huge factor.
That's the huge
premiership
factor.
Drought.
Yeah, a big club, haven't won since 86. Everyone gets excited about them and away they go.
And you think Parramatta, you couldn't think more rugby league heartland, could you? And like you say, the 80s and that team.
No.
And well, they haven't won since.
I hope they have a great year. I just feel for Brad Arthur. I think he sits in a difficult situation.
Yeah, but that's the beast, mate. That's the beast because you look at a number of clubs, other than the ones you mentioned. There's got to be pressure on all of them.
All the coaches.
Like you look at Trent Barrett next year at the Bulldogs with who's coming to the club, who's playing.
But if he makes the top eight, I think fans will be okay with that. That's what I'm saying. I feel like there's a big gap between making the top eight, making the top four, and then winning the grand final. That's a huge difference. Those three places.
Yeah, well, it's four places to make the top four compared to a top eight. So I think Parramatta have built well. That's what I mean. I look at their roster, and I go, that's a top four roster. I look at the Dogs, and I go, top eight.
Yeah, okay.
I look at Roosters, I go top four. I look at Raiders, I look at top eight. I look at Cowboys. I'm thinking if they can make top eight, that's a terrific job for them. Mm. They, you know, Tigers probably anywhere from 11 to 8 again. It's the expectation that you have in your own mind,
and you think
about
Paris
a club
is,
where they
Paris
should
squad
be
is that good.
Yeah, so I look at Parramatta and I see them as a top four side.